Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, good morning, and welcome back to the Thistle Scottish Rugby Podcast Breakfast Show Calcutta Cup edition. Yes, that is right. The Six Nations is here and it is the biggest game of the calendar. Scotland versus England at Twickenham tomorrow to kick things off. You just cannot beat it. It is David, Matt and Alan with you to talk through the team and preview what is always the biggest game of the year. Alan, how's that level of hope building? Can you feel it in like the bottom of your stomach?
Do you remember, I don't think there's ever been a time in our lifetimes where there's been this much optimism going into a Twickenham away match. And actually, it's creating fear in the pit of my stomach.
I think the last time there was this much sort of optimism was the time we shipped 60. And it was like peak Hugh Jones and everyone was like, we're going to carve up. And we got absolutely dispatched. I think that's the last time I can remember going to Twickenham feeling happy.
Yeah, it feels very strange. Obviously, the bookies are still very much siding towards England, but it feels like the general sort of narrative, both in sort of the press but also on Twitter, is much more 50-50 or potentially even siding slightly towards Scotland. Mm. And I don't like it. I don't like it one bit.
No. Matt, how are you feeling about it all?
Just nice to have Six Nations back. It feels like there's been quite a lot of shit going on in the world of rugby in general. It's getting quite a lot of heat from a lot of corners, so maybe we can just like focus on the pitch stuff and have a bit of entertainment the weekend. So,
well, yes, and we will be with you, of course, throughout the whole Six Nations, and you can follow us on Twitter at Thistle. At Thistle Rugby Pod, of course it is. On Instagram, Thistle_Rugby_Pod. The real strategy has kicked off. Our fans will be seeing those dropping in. Alan's been mining TikTok for some of the latest trends, and you're going to get some incredible content there.
I keep having to delete TikTok though, it's so addictive.
Yeah.
It's like 1 a.m. I'm just like doom scrolling. Oh god, I need to get off this, but it's just so good.
I think the online harms bill doesn't like take into account just like the addictivity for like people in like their mid-30s of TikTok as well.
Yeah,
it's really 100%. Focused on like, you know, child porn and stuff, but not the real victims. It's tough. And then of course you can get us on our Substack. That's on Thistle Scottish Rugby Podcast on Substack. Subscribe over there. We will do a debrief newsletter on Monday capturing all of the fallout from the game on Saturday. And finally, one last plug for our Fanzo Pint Predictor League. Download the Fanzo app and you can predict the scores for all of the Six Nations games. And if you get those, if you get them either spot on or if you get them close, you're winning free pints of Guinness at pubs all across the UK. And if you join our league, Thistle, firstly, you'll be joining hundreds and hundreds of other people to compete against. But secondly, if you get in that league before the end of tonight, so Friday the 3rd, you will be entered into a prize draw to win free tickets for Scotland versus Italy last weekend of the Six Nations. So it's an absolutely cracking prize and a great opportunity for a bit of competition and to win some pints. So get the Fanzo app downloaded, predict your scores, and join that league. Thistle. Let's get straight into it. Squad announcement yesterday. Firstly, the SRU just going early at like 8:30 in the morning. That's like a new thing to surprise everyone. Loved it.
Do you think it had, you know, maybe some people in the press / I guess ourselves in certain ways were getting access to the team, so they were just like, oh fuck it, let's launch it. Or do you think actually it was
possibly, but nobody got it right.
Yeah.
Like, we got Crosby right, but people were telling us that Cam Redpath was going to start.
Redpath could have been injured. Don't know.
Could have been injured. We don't know. But, like, John Barkley didn't get it right. Tom English didn't get it right.
No, it's true. And also, the sort of English team had already basically been leaked, right? So
yeah.
It wasn't like there was any sort of, like, significant advantage of sort of keeping it under wraps.
I liked it.
Or just like the secret, they never specified, you know, where normally like the team will be announced at 12 or 2. They didn't actually specify any point, I think. So they were just like, fuck it, we're going to launch when we want.
I was pleasantly surprised, you know, get it out there early. And Matt, there was a few, certainly a few talking points in there. What was the one that sort of struck you most when you first looked at the team?
I think I think the fact that John DL had come out in the week and said that had basically talked up Xander Fagerson's fitness and like said that he's like, you know, the fittest he's ever been, et cetera, and then to not even see him in the 23 was pretty surprising. I'm sure we'll come on to it, but it's maybe like my biggest worry about the team. And then the other one, I think, is, well, the other two probably actually is, I think Price out of the 23 entirely is like a big call. And I think you put a thing on, or someone put a thing on our Twitter that Kev Miller had posted, like last however many starts it was at 9 for Scotland, like between Laidlaw and Price in recent years, no one's really broke that up. So it's a pretty big statement. And then Harris, you know, all three of these guys, Lions, Harris not starting when he's been such a mainstay, and Jones in recent years doesn't really seem to have been a Townsend favourite. So quite a few talking points, really.
Good job we've got a podcast on which to do that. Should we get props out of the way, just so we don't embarrass ourselves when we're in sort of full flow? Obviously, Pierre Schurman we was probably stuck on there at loose head, but then Nell chosen in that front row with George Turner in between them. You guys happy with that front row, Matt? You seem to have some sort of concerns.
I think if we talked about it before, like Nell starting, we could kind of get comfortable with if he was there to basically scrummage for 45, 50 minutes and then Fagerson to come on. But the fact Fagerson isn't involved at all is a bit of a concern. Now, I think I was kind of like looking back a bit over like Bergen's involvement. And to be fair to him, in sort of like 2017, 2018, he played in quite a few big games and a few big wins for Scotland. And I don't think he ever let anyone down, but his career seems to have like slowed a little bit, not getting much game time at Edinburgh. And then even with his move to Glasgow, I think he's been injured quite a bit, but he's not really played. So it is a bit of a concern at three.
I guess my sort of amateur view on the sort of Schumann-Nell combination up against obviously Sinclair and Genge is clearly Nell's not as mobile around the park as Sinclair and Genge, but I wonder whether that does, we do have a slight advantage at scrum time. I know sort of historically Sinclair and Genge have been broadly quite average when it comes to the scrum, obviously great in open field. And I wonder if just the mandate to Nell is like, don't go further away than like a meter from any ruck. And just focus on just nailing your scrums for like 50 minutes.
Yeah.
That's all you need to do.
Do not get caught in like a wide channel.
Or yeah, else it's yeah, over. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. He just takes the knee after each scrum and just waits for the next one.
100%. Just walk off the pitch. Don't worry about it. Interesting. Again, they've not really come out and said around injuries, but obviously Batty being picked ahead of Sutherland.
Yeah.
On the bench as well is kind of an interesting one, I guess. Again, another line, right? That's now completely dropped out of the 23, and you know, good for Batty.
He has been coming back from injury though, hasn't he?
Yeah.
Sutherland.
Yeah. No.
Ulster, yeah.
It's true. And also, I guess potentially there's an argument to say that Batty off the bench is potentially a little bit more impactful, just given his sort of style than Sutherland. Although I actually think Sutherland was quite good off the bench. I can't remember one or two of the autumn international games. It is a concern though. I think obviously clearly WPNL and Bergen isn't maybe what you describe as sort of a world class situation.
I think that's probably putting it kindly. But if we put it looking into the second row, I mean, we've talked about the renaissance of Richie Gray. He seemed, as we talked about in our preview a couple of weeks ago, he now seems sort of stuck on to start. And then Matt, were you sort of unsurprised to see Gilchrist being put in next to him? That seems like a combination designed to sort of really sort of get after that English lineout.
Yeah, it seems as if Gilchrist has become a bit of the fact he's vice captain as well, like a bit of a first pick under Townsend now. And whether some of that's been forced by the fact that Cummings and Gray are injured probably does feed into that. But I think, to be fair, Gilchrist, who's been playing really well recently, and I think particularly in that last Edinburgh Saracens game, like his physicality against a big pack that's going to provide a lot of the England squad, or a decent amount, was pretty encouraging. I think Richard Gray is definitely on form as well, but it gives you pretty nice like line out options. I think that Gray's like ability in the loose is maybe not what it was, but I think in terms of heft in the scrum and height of the line out, it kind of makes sense to me.
Surprised Skinner didn't get in the 23?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose maybe if Johnny Gray had been fit, he maybe comes in and then Skinner goes on the bench and covers 6 and 5. But maybe they just wanted like a little bit more heft, I suppose. That's what that bench maybe says to me in the forwards.
Yeah. I thought you go back to that Saracens game as well, that you know both Gilchrist and Skinner both played really, really well against and I thought Skinner had a really, really good game, both around the park and at the line out. So feel bad for him that he hasn't been able to get into the 23 because he's sort of put in a pretty big performance against what is a lot of those England forwards, right? But yeah.
It feels like he's kind of stuck now between being like a really great backup second row and a really great backup back row.
Yeah. And yeah, I think you're right in the sense that, you know, clearly Richie Gray and Grant Gilchrist are just so much size there. And I think generally it's quite a big sort of four. Well, actually, including, I guess Richie's naturally not sort of a massive six, but I guess with those two plus Crosby and Ferguson, it's like quite a lot of heft there for the Scotland pack, right?
And yeah, and then looking into the back row, of course, you know, Richie installed as captain, of course, and then Luke Crosby, the talking point, with then Matt Ferguson at eight. I think obviously Richie and Ferguson pretty much sort of nailed on. Hamish Watson not recovered from whatever one of his various injuries he's got at the moment, so Luke Crosby comes right in. But sort of, you know, based on that performance for Edinburgh against Saracens that we've talked about, and just generally his form in the URC, Matt, are you sort of, you know, backing Crosby, your boy Luke Crosby, to sort of step up?
Townsend did confirm that Watson was kind of not quite match fit, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Watson did play 80 minutes.
Yeah.
Basically 80 minutes last week, right? But yeah, I think it's obviously that was his first match back for 2 months.
Yeah. Because it feels like he's still the kind of player that he's been so important, and he is such like, seems like he's a fit player anyway, aerobically, that they might have risked him, but, and maybe even on the bench. But I suppose if you look at that bench, Watson can only really play 7, whereas you'd say pretty much all the other back row options are quite adaptable and could play in a few positions. But in terms of Crosby, I'm really looking forward to seeing him. I think we talked about it being like really good form. I think he's I don't think we necessarily have like too many players like him in terms of just being like a really abrasive big unit who's also pretty good over the ball. And I'm looking forward to seeing him getting like properly stuck in, because I think the challenge physically that England will present, the chance to like get stuck into a Marcus Smith, for instance, even sort of try and like put Farrell off his game, I think he's to the manner born for that kind of approach.
We discussed, I think, specifically through the lens of sort of Ireland and Munster, that we've not really had a lot of players that are like horrible bastards that you don't want to play against. And I think sort of Crosby falls into that category. I think if Dempsey comes on for Ferguson, it's potentially our most like horrible bastard back row of the professional era. Feels like a Richie Crosby Dempsey back row is really gritty.
Yeah.
And
proper shit houses, all three of them.
Yeah, exactly. I look, you know, I guess I really do think that performance against Saracens probably gave Townsend the confidence to start Crosby in this match. You know, I've got a little bit of trepidation that, you know, he's only got the two caps and clearly this is a big match and he's in a super, super important position with a very important role. And look, super hope he sort of steps up, and clearly he seems like the sort of player. It's kind of his career has been a bit more of a sort of Hamish Watson trajectory. You sort of get your players like Darge and Richie, who are sort of, you know, basically like professional stars from sort of 2021, whereas sort of him and Hamish Watson have really had to kind of grind their way up sort of through the Prem, started kind of like bit part in the Edinburgh team, and then both of them really only around sort of 24, 25 kind of really started to kind of solidify their place in the Edinburgh team. So hopefully if Crosby can end up turning out a bit like Watson was a couple of years ago, then it should be pretty good. But it's obviously going to be a big step up for him, right?
Can I read a segment from an email we got this week from somebody called Simon Burnett, who's a listener, and he's created an Excel spreadsheet of the stats of all Scotland's back rowers, and the title of this email is "Dangerously Hot Scottish Rugby Take, Please Read." So when you get that sort of clickbait coming into the mailbag, thethistlerugby@gmail.com, you have to sort of dive in. And he says, it's basically, he's making the case that Jamie Ritchie shouldn't be captain or starting for Scotland. And listen to this paragraph. When looking at the stats of the back rowers that played the most minutes for Scotland over the last year, Ritchie, Ferguson, Watson, Darge, Dempsey and Bradbury, one stat is particularly prominent, and that is Jamie Ritchie's penalty count. He averaged 2 penalties a game, and over the course of the Autumn Nations series gave up more penalties than every other Scottish back rower combined. He also averaged 10.7 tackles per 80 minutes, compared to Ferguson's 13.5, Watson's 16.3 and Darge's 13.7. Additionally, he had the most missed tackles per game and missed tackles per tackles made, lowest meters per carry and fewest defenders beaten per carry. So, I mean, I've just sprung that on you guys, but, you know, Simon's crunched the numbers. Alan, you've already gotten Chris Harris dropped. Do you want to see if you can get, do you want to see if you can get Jamie Ritchie cancelled as well?
There is definitely sort of an undercurrent across sort of like Twitter and a few rugby forums where people are starting to sort of question whether Ritchie would still have his place on merit if he wasn't captain. And I think it's probably fair to say that he hasn't quite kicked on, especially across sort of the Autumn Internationals. Saying that, however, I do think his sort of style and approach does bring a lot to that Scotland pack. And whilst obviously Simon Burnett has a lot of great stats there, and I love a stat, I think in terms of that balance of that back row, it works pretty well.
Simon has offered to send us the Excel document. So Simon, please do send that over.
Generally do. I would love to see it.
I'd like to see the turnover stats in that as well.
I could not find the turnover stats for the Autumn Internationals, which is obviously Richie's strongest area, but I don't remember them being particularly impressive. Darge during the Six Nations won 7 turnovers, Ferguson 5, but it was just the 2 for Watson. So, you know, there is different ways in which you can interpret all of that. But yeah, send through the Excel. Drop the Excel, Simon, and appreciate it. It's about a 2,000-word email. You know, I think you need an editor, but a lot of it is good stuff. So thanks very much for for sending that over. Let's go into the back line. Obviously, one of the big talking points, Ben White, chosen at 9. I think collectively on the pod, we're big fans of White, but it was still, Alan, quite a big thing to see, you know, Ali Price's name not on that team sheet.
Yeah, 100%. I think since the World Cup, he's been such an ever-present role within that Scotland team. And clearly sort of had some sort of like peaks and troughs where his game sort of come and gone. But I don't think any of us thought that he wouldn't still be the starting scrum half going into the 2023 World Cup. But I think, to be completely fair, when you look at Glasgow, it increasingly feels a little bit like Franco Smith sees George Horn as his starting nine. Ali Price hasn't been playing. I don't think he's been playing terribly, but hasn't been playing that well for Glasgow. And at the same time, we've talked about it a little bit, whenever Ben White's had an opportunity in a Scotland shirt, he's looked really, really good.
And that's it.
Well, I thought Matt might jump in there.
No, you've got nothing to say, Your Honour.
I wasn't. There was no sort of lead in to my comments.
I just thought I was going to leave there for you to go because I know you're a big Ben White fan.
Well, that's the thing. I can't really add much to your perfect analysis there. I'm actually pretty happy with that. I think quite a lot of the selections that Townsend's gone with are on form. Obviously, some of that is injury related, but it seems like a pretty exciting selection to me. And I think that White definitely suits the way that Russell will want to play, at least.
It is interesting. I guess it feels, on that point around sort of he's picking on form, there's probably slight, in terms of making these changes, in terms of, you know, Ben White coming in for Price and especially sort of Jones coming in for Harris, it feels like that maybe would have been something to do in autumn.
But yeah, it's interesting. Yeah.
To try and kind of give that sort of time to sort of bed in. I guess ultimately, you know, Tuipulotu and Jones have been playing together at Glasgow, so that sort of works together. But it interesting that for the first match of Six Nations against England and also so close to getting to the World Cup, he's gone, I would say, Harris and Price probably across the last 3 years have been two of the three names, or two of the four names that you would have had nailed on for every match. Yeah. And so it really does feel like one of the most dramatic shifts in Tooney's selection, and interesting that he's chosen now to do it at the start of the Six Nations in such a big match away with the World Cup just coming up. Look, he listened to the pod and he was like, I can't not take Alan's advice any longer. I have to make a shift now.
Have you sent Chris a message to apologise? Or have you...
Chris knows I love him, all right?
Yeah. Going for a beer post.
Yeah.
It is interesting,
Ham it out.
Last pod, we had a bit of a go at Ali Price, and Alan's had his usual diatribe against Chris Harris. So, you know, like, and then Tooney's, he's gone for it. It's interesting. But I saw a comment on Twitter which made me laugh. The Tuipulotu thing, Tooney's just been like, he just bought the hype. Like, everybody's jumped in on that nickname. Like, World Rugby are using it in their comments. Like, all the commentators think it's incredibly funny, and that it's gone from being a meme to being real life really, really quickly.
It's like the meme stock of World Rugby. It's like everyone's buying in.
I think there's worse, you know, I love narrative and I love memes. I think there's worse reasons to select centres together.
No, the meme stock craze has crashed and burned is the only sort of cautionary tale I'd tell them.
Yeah, but it did ride so high. Tell that to the board members. Tell that to the shareholders at AMC. They're loving it. Are you nervous that the last time that Hugh Jones started in England, we shipped 60 points, Alan? At Twickenham, I mean.
At Twickenham, yeah.
That was a great time when Alex Dunbar was carving up at 12 and Hugh Jones was carving up at 13, and we thought, this is it.
Yeah.
That is us set for a wee while.
Yeah. That 2016, sort of like peak Cotter, now back in the market, obviously.
How far we fell.
with Dunbar and Jones. And that was like, Finn was still sort of just kind of come, like, he obviously kind of really came on the scene in sort of 2015, but 2016 was kind of when he like solidified his role. Tommy Seymour was still floating around. It was really and Laidlaw was still just like an absolute king. It was really a great time to be a Scotland rugby fan.
Really great times. I mean, I may have entered it flippantly and with a bit of a joke, but you know, there's always been slight question marks over Hugh Jones's defense. So, you know, that trade for that very defensive minded Chris Harris at 13, as you say, Alan, is quite a departure for Tooney, and looks like we're gonna give it a go.
I think, you know, there was obviously that stat, there was a few stats floating around on Twitter yesterday, where I think you clearly Scott over the last couple of years, Scotland's attack has become less potent. But Scotland's defence has got much stronger than it has been historically. Again, whether this is a focus of Tooney to try and sort of slightly shift that attacking piece, I don't know. I think ultimately maybe some of it is just 2 point. Jones and Tupelotu both are on really good form and seem to work well together as a combination. But no, I like it, to be fair. I think it's definitely sort of a 10, 12, 13 combination that I would be extremely surprised if they weren't making something happen, making gains, making line breaks against that England 10, 12, 13 combination as well.
Do you think Townsend thought that Borthwick would go down a more traditional power-based route and go back to Farrell at 10, Tulang at 12 or 13 maybe, and he's picked someone like Jones and Tupelotu, who's probably going to play anyway, just to try and manipulate that defence slightly and go for a more, I don't know, pace game, skill game approach. Versus now, if you look at those selections, it's actually like it's quite similar in a lot of ways, which I didn't necessarily expect.
Yeah. And then I think Jones and Marshman, very similar players, and also obviously have played together and know each other extremely well.
Yeah, it's interesting, because I think if you think back to that game that Jones got absolutely carved up, it wasn't a Tulangi running straight over him. It was Jonathan Joseph burning him, or just getting on. Well, maybe actually more it was Dunbar, but getting on the players outside and being manipulated. So I wonder if that 13 channel is just going to be like a good place to attack for both sides.
Make it fun.
Hopefully. Yeah, a bit of fun. That's what we're after. And Alan, your boy Kyle Steyn brought in on the wing.
Well, I think sort of leading on that point around sort of potential issues around the sort of 13 channel, I am a big fan of Kyle Steyn. I guess ultimately the only thing is, I guess, maybe not defensively as solid as someone like a Maitland, or just natural or kind of has experience in that role, right? So again,
I think a lot of people have lost money betting on Maitland this week.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Market speculation on Maitland.
I generally did think Maitland would go in. I guess again, just Kyle Steyn, just his general form over the last 6 weeks. In attack, he is pretty fantastic. He seems to beat the first man on a significant number of occasions. I guess again, the only issue with Steyn is sometimes he has issues defensively, and he'll probably be up against Hassel Collins, who I appreciate is having his debut, but is one of the most sort of like natural finisher wingers in world rugby. And I think if we're on sort of the back foot, Kyle Steyn might have a tough time against someone like that.
I'd say Steyn's pretty physical though. Although Darcy is a great defender, punches above his weight, like having someone as big as Steyn and as tall, I think he'll be able to cope with that.
Agreed. And I think Kyle Steyn is probably better under the high, I'm trying to think about under the high ball, and whether Borthwick goes for a bit of a kind of bomb heavy approach, especially sort of early doors. I think that's one of the other reasons why people were thinking Maitland might come in, because he's just so solid in every facet. I guess that's a little bit of a concern with our back three, is are we going to be a little bit fragile if they start putting some bombs up? Appreciate it looks like it's going to be dry and not too windy. But all three of them have had moments where they can be a little bit tetchy.
To say the least.
Yeah.
At the least. I don't think we don't need to sort of hand-wring too much over the selections of Stuart Hogg and Doohan van der Merwe, two people that, if they are sort of stuck on starters, I think it is worth commenting on those bench selections. I think we talked a little bit about the forwards, and obviously you can see the rationale of bringing on a Jack Dempsey, but the sort of the makeup of the back bench, you know, George Horn makes sense. Kinghorn, obviously, they're covering an awful lot. Do you think Harris is, if you're not starting Harris, do you think Harris is the sort of person that you want on the bench? Like, what does he bring, you know, if he comes on at 60 minutes? Closing down the game if we're winning? I don't know.
Seems ambitious.
Yeah, I know. Exactly. I think if that's your rationale, yeah, you're thinking, fucking hell, Tooney, what is going on in your head?
I mean, I suppose it's just a bit of a yin and yang, right? That he is very different to Jones, rather. So, I don't know, God forbid, if we're getting torn up again in the centre after, you know, even 50 minutes or something, then Harris comes on and secures things up. I think he can also probably a push play in the wing as well. So I wonder if there's like a bit of a flexibility argument in there.
Yeah. Alan, do you want to make the case for Harris being dropped from the 40-man squad?
I'm also just not really sure exactly who else you might sort of put in.
Redpath, maybe?
Well, this was the thing. Redpath's the other one, but I guess would you ever want to put Redpath in that sort of 13 role? Or
you could push Tupelota out to 13, I suppose.
No, that is true. It's, you know, ultimately, and I guess Harris has previously sort of covered wing as well, so potentially has a little bit more sort of flexibility. It's ultimately, I think Harris, no matter what, think in terms of his sort of recent form for Scotland, I imagine he comes across as a pretty well-liked person within the camp and seems like quite a good influence upon the squad. So probably quite a good person to have in that 23, both from just sort of like an experience and sort of a culture perspective. So I think ultimately there's like, he covers sort of, you're happy with him coming on as centres and if needed the wing, and then he's probably a good person to have in that 23, both especially away to England.
And speaking of England, when you saw their squad announced, I think, Matt, you were in the WhatsApp group saying you just don't think it's that good. Are you prepared to stand that up?
Well, last night I went through both 15s to do a kind of combined 15. And I actually think
That is lovely. That is way more preparation than we usually do for a podcast.
And I think it's just in Scotland's favour, in my opinion. So the people I think would get in ahead of their English counterpart are Richie, who I think is, although we talked about maybe some of his doubt, some of his flaws, I think he is a more experienced and overall better operator than Ludlam. I think that Matt Fagerson is now a proven international, and while I like Alex Dombrandt, I think that isn't the case with him. I think I'd rather have Russell than Smith. I would rather have Doohan than probably either of the two wingers. And although Stewart has played very well for England, I would still ultimately at the end of the day have Hogg, because I think that Hogg has shown himself to have performed very well against England over the long term. And then I think there's like Schoeman and Genge, I think, are the same. I think Gilchrist is just as good as Chesham. Crosby and Curry probably about the same in terms of both a bit untested at Six Nations. White and Van Poorvelt maybe about the same. Jones and Marchant the same. So I think England do edge it in a few areas, but there's just something about the England team that is full of like good players, obviously, but it's not got, I don't know, that like slight fear factor that I think they've had in the past when we've played them and they've maybe had like the Vunipolas on cracking form, terrorizing form, or Tuilagi, for instance, or even like, I think we struggled against Ben Earl. I get he's on the bench. But I just think it is, it's not a bad England squad, but I think it is beatable.
I suppose it's also brand new as well, Alan, isn't it? Do you think we're, as you said, when you were plotting the path to the Grand Slam, you want to play this England side first up, right? Because this is their first game under Borthwick.
100%. And just, I guess slightly to on that as well, this is a team that I don't think these Scotland players fear at all. Yeah. The number of times they've beaten England, both home, now home and away, the fact that Edinburgh took down Saracens at home and nearly beat them away. I think, you know, when you compare it to sort of Ireland or France, where I do still think there's probably a relatively sort of significant mental block for these Scotland players, I think A, they probably are going into this match relatively confident, and B, to your point, Dave, Borthwick is clearly coming in and trying to sort of implement his game plan. And I think from all intents and purposes, from what players have said, Borthwick is a very good coach. And I think ultimately England will likely improve throughout the Six Nations. So if we are going to beat them, especially at Twickenham, I think getting them first game up is the best situation we could ask for. And to your point, that lets us roll into Wales at home and then potentially a Grand Slam.
Steady.
There's not much beyond Wales at home.
Yeah, but then it's France away, but then you're riding away. And Wales show that if you can get the first two games out, anything can happen.
Oh,
Wales show that you can be truly terrible and win the Six Nations.
Wales won the Six Nations 2 years ago with a significantly worse squad than Scotland have now. That's what always gives me belief that Scotland could do something.
God, that was terrible, wasn't it?
And then Pivac's
been fired.
That was
probably the worst one.
Yeah, we
and
talk
Gallen's
about,
like, literally playing the hits. Like, I know we're not playing Wales, but I can't believe that like Lee Halfpenny's still playing for Wales.
Yeah, although he got injured, so Liam Williams.
All right, fair enough.
Agreed. But no, focusing on this match, I still think England are objectively favourites, but I don't think any. I think the Scotland team will be going into the match without much sort of fear over what that England team's going to sort of bring.
England are 8-point favourites on Bet365. Matt, are you thinking Scotland win here? Tight Scotland win?
I'm pretty divided because, as I say, I don't think that England's squad is that good. But in their favour is the fact that they're back at Twickenham with a full crowd, new coach, it's the start of like a new era, and given the recent context of the Calcutta, I think they will be like super, super pumped. And obviously Scotland will as well. But I think just in terms of that, like motivation and the context, I think they've got a slight edge. But then I was saying that this week, and I thought that England would pick basically as big a team as possible and try and beat Scotland up, which, you know, I was thinking about it in the week, like the two teams that we probably struggled against the most, as you've just mentioned, Alan, Ireland and South Africa, in recent years, or under Townsend at least, is because they just batter us. We can't cope with the physicality. So if I was England, I would have been picking Tuilagi, even if he's not on great form. But the fact they've picked like maybe a slightly more mobile, lighter team, I think slightly plays into Scotland's hands. Having said that, I have on the Fanzo predictor had England by four.
Oh, here we go. Here we go.
That's where you show your true colours.
Well, yeah, the proof's in the pudding, right, with Fanzo. Just because, yeah, for those reasons I've given.
Alan, where are you at?
So if Fanzo is the insight into our true position, I'm Scotland by one.
Lovely.
Oofed. That'd be so good.
Yeah, I think it's actually going to be a relatively high scoring but tight match, and I think it's one of these ones where it's almost like total points will be over 40, but it will only be within a score, and I could see it sort of coming down to the end. And I think I'm just hoping that it's that sort of Russell Hogg axis, which, you know, has its issues and has had issues across the last 3 years. But I think especially against England seems to bring out the best in both of them, especially Hogg. Hogg seems to really relish England, playing England.
Yeah.
And so I think I'm just sort of banking on those two to to sort of guide Scotland home in that last sort of 10 to 15 minute period.
I'm on Scotland by 3 on Fanzo Pint Predictor, so I'm feeling more confident than you, Alan. I'm also on Bet365. I'm eyeing up a little triple of Doohan to score at any time, more than 4.5 tries combined, and Scotland to win between 1 and 5, which I think
I like that.
That's quite a tasty little option. It's coming in about 5 to 1. And I'm like, that is, but it's actually quite short odds, but that feels quite nice to me.
Let's change Doohan for WP Nell and see those odds soar. <Yeah. laughs>
That's the thing, is you can drop in like a George Turner and get those odds to go up a little bit.
Yeah.
Because hookers often do score a wee bit. But yeah, I don't know. Just feels like we particularly under Jones, we had such a good stretch against England. And, you know, maybe Twickenham hoodoo has been broken ever so slightly. But it's, you know, it's just, as we sort of said at the top, it's just so exciting. Every year, even though we get caught up in the hype, and I know that after the England game and we've lost by 20, it's going to be like crushing and horrific again. But it's just such a great tournament. It's so exciting for Scotland, England every year. Like, the hype is always there. It's always the first game up now.
What have you guys got for other games?
That's a good point.
Just to complete the Fanzo.
Complete the Fanzo.
I have Ireland by 10. And
I've got Ireland by 10 as well, then.
France by 24.
I've gone for Wales. No, I've gone for Wales. Yeah, Italy. France by 17. And I think Wales have got a good chance. I think Gatlin back. They've picked like a very Gatland-esque team. I hate to say it, but I think Ireland are obviously class, but I think they've got a good chance.
I think this Six Nations is going to show that the Gatland approach and those like Welsh stars of like 28, 29 to 34, it's over.
Oh, talk to me, Alan. Talk to me.
I just don't quite sort of buy into the Gatlin hype anymore. I think actually it's going to get pretty found out, and I think Wales will go into sort of like full crisis mode by the end of the Six Nations, both on and off the pitch. Ospreys, I think, will be done. It's,
oh my god, this would be too good.
It's sorry, you can't be picking Lee Halfpenny. He's clearly lost his marbles. It's over. But we'll see. I say that, and then we'll lose to them at Murrayfield, and it'll be the worst thing.
We're definitely going to lose to them at Murrayfield. Yeah. It's going to be so bleak.
Yeah.
Any other business, lads, or should we get the day started? If we absolutely have to stop talking about Scottish rugby, we will. But please do, as we talked about there, get that Fanzo app downloaded and get yourself into our league, Thistle. If you do it by the end of today, you will be entered straight into that prize draw for tickets for Scotland versus Italy. So a great thing to look forward to at the end of the tournament. Get following us on socials. I don't want to give away, you know, everything, but there's some unbelievable memes and reels coming your way. So please do get us on Twitter at Thistle Rugby Pod and Thistle_Rugby_Pod, and get the newsletter subscribed to, and we will be in your inboxes on Monday. That's on Substack, Thistle Scottish Rugby Podcast. Until then, Calcutta Cup, let's do it.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.